You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM.
Welcome back to the Batuta Advocate radio show, recording live from the Queensland Channel Country. A lot of big guests of late, say that at the start of every episode now. Malcolm Turnbull, Bob Geldof.
Sir Bob Geldof. Even though he's Irish.
And Geoff Thompson. So you mix those three together and you get today's guest.
Jeez.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Lee, Shane Lee.
How are you, boys?
Good, thanks,
good, man.
Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Look, I'm good. I'm surviving this ISO thing. I've got three young kids at home and a wife that was working from home. So, yeah, I can't wait for the pubs to reopen.
What are you doing day to day? Were you educating?
Yeah, a little bit of homeschooling. Yeah. A little bit of mining. My son starts school next year. Yeah. So keeping him occupied. And then trying to do a bit of podcasting and I work with Spartan Sports as well during the day. So, dodging and weaving.
Yeah, and probably working a lot harder in isolation. That was the dream. Everyone's like, sit on the couch.
No.
So you've just come back from India in March. Did you just make the cutoff?
We just made the cutoff. So I went over there to play in the World Masters.
Right.
Yeah. Not having played any cricket for 17 years.
None.
None. Not much training either.
Not even in the backyard.
Zero. And I walked out to bat. Well, I don't think they were going to take it that seriously, actually. I walked out to bat for Australia after 17 years against Sri Lanka, who had Muralitharan and all these little Sri Lankan spinners. Like, I can't pronounce their names. And
Chamindavas.
Yes, all those guys. He was playing, and we were 5 for 17.
Harath.
Five for 17 when I walked out to bat, and I walked off, we were 6 for 17.
Who got you?
Harath.
Harath.
There was a bit of wrath off.
So those Masters, they did Yankee Stadium as well. Is that the one?
No, that was the All-Star one back in 2015. That was Shane Warne's team versus Sachin Tendulkar's team.
Yeah, it was. But it was actually well followed over there. So in the stadium, there was 80,000 people there to watch that.
Pakistani and Jamaican.
There'd be 80,000 expats there, and they've just been crying out to see Chris Gayle hit a six at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and they got me fucking shuffling across one.
So 17 years since retirement.
Yes.
17 years since your last health kick or regime. Like, do you obviously now, I always wondered this with cricketers, like post career, you wouldn't be doing anything remotely similar to the fitness, you know, of cricket. It'd be just gym and
gym and F45 and that sort of stuff. But it was funny, the first weekend I had off from cricket after 20 years of cricket, and I never grew up on boats, but I decided to buy a boat.
Yeah.
Walked down to the Clontarf Marina and with one of my good mates who now runs KPMG, Andrew Yates. We looked at two boats and bought a big 38-foot Mustang. Didn't know how to drive the frigging thing. And I took out my Kookaburra cricket kit, which I had for my whole career, and I did a ceremonial dumping and throwing off the cricket kit off the back. Which now I've got a son, it's pretty stupid, but so lucky I'm working at Spartan, so I guess
yeah,
it's just cricket gear.
Straight into the big blue bin, you know, of the harbour.
Well, I guess that's the state you're in. You're like, it's over.
I'd had a gut for, but there's apparently a really good little reef off there now, so they're catching some fish.
Might get some merch.
So you retired, you know, obviously back in the halcyon days of Australian cricket. I've heard from a few players back then who were coached by John Buchanan.
Oh yes, Buck.
That later on, you know, like back in like 2004, 2005, he started to take the preseason very seriously, and that basically led to Stuart McGill having to take them to court because, as we all know, him and Shane just used to walk in from either end, and they've got the coach telling them to carry a jerry can of water up a sand dune and back.
And while trying to smoke a cigarette, warning too as well. No, it was it was pretty full on. McGill didn't like the physical side of things. It's funny, when I was first picked for New South Wales captain, Steve Rixon, the coach, asked me. He said, "I want to meet with you day one of the new season." And I knew the first question he was going to ask is how would I handle McGill, because all I know, he's a fucking nutter, right? And anyway, so the first question was, how are you going to handle McGill? And I said, well, the way I'm going to do it, basically, he's big on the team dinners. And I said, he's blowing up that the young kids now don't understand wine and food. So give me a bigger budget and I'll put him in charge of the team dinners. And he did it. He loved it. And I said, I got him on board. Beautiful. Then he said to me, Shane, next thing we're going to do, we're going to do paintball in Penrith. And I said, I've just got McGill on board. Are you serious, right? And then I told him, and he abused me for how these kids can't understand things, but he did it for me. We walked out there, and a commando was there waiting for us in his camouflage gear. And I said, Stu, just do it for me, mate. And he put on the gear, and then he got his gun and executed himself in the face and splattered yellow paint across his face. He says, I'm out. He went and sat back on the bus.
God, that is just the most Stuart McGill story I've ever heard.
It's a public execution.
Could have really hurt himself too with a paintball gun. Like,
but we had some good dinners that year, and we won the competition. So yeah. It was all good.
Yeah, siege mentality.
Yes.
So where did it all start? You and your brothers are keen cricketers, obviously.
Yep.
Two of you ended up playing for Australia, but Illawarra boys.
Yes.
Were you a steelworks family?
Yeah, Dad. Dad was a metallurgist. BHP for 40 years. Right. Mum was a stay-at-home mum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a very, very modest upbringing, but it was really nice. We went to Oak Flats High School.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Spent most of my formative years in demountables.
Yeah.
Because there were about 4,000 Yugoslavs in one school.
And had population fluctuating. 500, Yeah, so you actually would have been the only skips around, or you got background?
No, my gang then was pretty much, it was Michael Munt, the German, it was Roddy Otterson, the Peruvian, Tony Costa, the, where he's from, Portugal, I think, and Tony Blackmore, the Aussie.
Yeah, every guest we've had from the South Coast had parents in the steelworks. Volkanovsky.
And Dr. Carl.
Yeah.
He said that his old man, he did a similar job to that, where he was in like the science of metal.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I think Dr. Carl, his last name is bloody, you know.
Dig a ditch.
Yeah. As long as you're for him.
Guys, I would love to see in one of those New South Wales teachers, you know, from New South Wales education get sent down there.
Yeah.
Learn these names.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. A lot of nicknames in the South Coast anyway. When did you start seeing that as a, this is what we're doing after school?
Oh, with cricket-wise?
Yeah.
It was during school.
I
was ended up going straight from Oak Flats to Campbelltown. That was the closest grade club.
Yeah.
Playing first grade when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
So Dad would basically come home from the steelworks off a double night shift,
put
on the learner plates onto the white Commodore, and I would drive up to Campbelltown. He'd be sleeping. So I'm learning to drive.
That's a couple of hours, right?
So he had faith in me, or he's really tired, one of the two.
Is that up the escarpment?
Yep.
On the L plates. That would be pretty tight.
Not over it.
So from Campbelltown, what was it like out there? What was the...
It was hot.
Yeah.
It was dry. And then it was from Campbelltown. I thought, I need to move closer to the SCG because of the state thing. So I moved to Mossman then.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Yeah. Big change.
Not much of a change at all.
Campbelltown to Mossman.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole kind of time you were playing, there was this, and I want to know if this is something from your childhood, there was guitars.
Yeah.
There were bands. Was that a...
Well, mum played the piano.
Right.
Yeah, so there was a lot of sitting around singing, you know, Swanee River and that sort of stuff when we were younger. But it was a really good... I decided to learn guitar at 22.
Yeah, right.
Gavin Robertson, who was... New South Wales cricketer, and Australian cricketer, and a really good drummer. Actually drummed a bit with the Angels too, Robert. Right. I started learning. He said, we should put a band together. So we got Brett to learn the bass, and we got Brad McNamara to learn guitar as well, and we had a guy called Richard Cheekwee, who was half Samoan, half Chinese. Samoan body, Chinese penis. Bad combination. but a great front man.
I bet he got that one on stage. Thank you to Cheeks.
That's right. Our front man with no front.
So did the music come before the cricket?
No. Same sort of time.
Yeah.
Cricket was... Sounds funny, but looking back, from about 14, 15... I never ever thought I was going to play for Australia. Not arrogantly, but I think you have to think like that to get to that sort of level.
It's that Jordan mentality,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Wasn't that an amazing doco?
But it is the looks delusional at the time, but if you're not thinking that way, you're not going to...
And the backyard games are really competitive, and, you know, I was the older side, bat first, and Brett would bowl, and poor younger brother Grant... Nicknamed Dud, Dudley. He had to field, so he retired. He retired at 19.
Well, because they called the older war brother Korea.
Yes.
The forgotten war.
Yeah. So what's Dudley doing now?
Mate, he's a chartered accountant. Works for the Commonwealth Bank. So,
no.
Well, that's good he went that way, because sometimes the overshadowed the brothers of sporting greats end up in the back corner of a pub abusing people.
That could have been me.
So how much credit do you take for Brett's career then?
I take a bit. I definitely bully him around. But, you know, he's got to take a lot of credit too. He did bloody well. Brett had a broken back at 16. Broken back. Was in a back brace from 16 to 18.
How was that?
Well, he was stiff, wasn't he? I remember I took him out when he turned 18 for his first drink, and he had a full back brace on and was drinking bloody port and lemonade. Anyway, he didn't do that well that night, but his older brother might have.
I always wondered this, and the same with the Wars. In those environments, particularly, when you're playing top level, no one's really... You're all mates. Everyone's mates. Everyone's teammates. But it's not... You know, you have your own circle back home, I guess. And you've got your brother with you. So how did that...
Yeah, that was nice. A lot of my mates were mates away from cricket.
Yeah, yeah.
And you sort of... I look back now and see the guys that didn't have that, the Aussie team. They've actually... They've struggled after sport when it all finishes, because you are in a real bubble. But
You can't hang out with the team for the rest of your life.
No, you can't. No. And a lot of you don't want to either.
Get away from me.
I know all that you really hear now. Like if there's anything that's coming out of like the old cricket team of from years ago, it's always like X doesn't get along with X and this happened.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's right.
Like, we all know that, like, Stuart and Shane, arguably two of the best in the world at what they were doing, but they were chalk and cheese.
Chalk and cheese. I think there's a mutual respect there between them. But and I think it really helped McGill having Warnie in front of him.
Yeah.
Because people would always say to Stu, mate, you could have been anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when Stu was given the reins in the end, he imploded with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, it was old and fucked like Shane. What I mean,
it's full of Chardonnay.
He's an old man.
But you can't, sometimes the greatest can't be captains as well sometimes too. You got
Well, Warnie wanted to be captain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He still wants to be captain.
And it's just too Victorian.
It was just too a lot of things. He was great on the field, but I remember the 96 World Cup. I was first selected as a young 23-year-old all-rounder, and we got there, and Warnie was really nice to me. He sort of took me in, it's going to be the Shane Show. Me and you, the Shane Show. It's the Shane Show. And,
Rise of the Shanes.
And Steve Orr pulled me aside and goes, how are you going with Warnie? I said, look, he's been really nice to me. He goes, mate, do you remember when you were at school, and there was a kid at school that had no mates, and this new kid comes to school, and he's... The kid with no mates all over that new kid.
Yeah.
He said, you're that new kid, and what is the fucking kid with no mates? So just be aware. But he was unreal. And then basically he said, so we, the Eden Gardens Calcutta opening ceremony was going live to a billion people, and each player from around the world was walked out by an Indian model.
Yeah,
and I was single at the time, and Warnie was single on tour. So he basically he said, I'll get the best two for us, the Shane Show.
The Shane Show.
Shane Show. Anyway, he lined up these two girls, and we had one drink, and we're going back to their place. We think it's all going to happen. And then we got there, and there's a whole extended family there, and we spent the whole night signing autographs and having a bloody meal. I said, the Shane Show, really? He goes, don't tell the boys that.
We were talking about it with that whole documentary, The Last Dance. I was trying to figure out... you've got all the archetypes of a team there. You've got, obviously, you've got 2IC in Pippen. You've got the supreme leader in Jordan. And I was wondering, who is Australia's Rodman? And the closest I can get is Warnie. Is that...
He is. Yeah, he was. Yeah, he would be.
Just a bit of a kook.
Might look a little bit different in the shower, I reckon. But, but Warnie, he's the best cricketer I ever saw a play with, definitely. Yeah. He's a freak of a cricketer and a great cricket brain.
Yeah.
He's got good stats everywhere.
Yeah. And he's got an incredible presence on Instagram.
Yes.
So what was the feeling, amongst the playing group, both state and Australian playing group, or just the Australian cricketing scene when you guys started playing songs and doing shows? Because that hadn't happened before, right? Had guys, Tom, I'd go pigging.
Yeah,
and,
that's
right. And, they had people that had their own interests, but you guys were on... Rage.
Well, we were. Brett was dressing like Bross, and it was, the guys were supportive. Some of them, the older guys, sort of look back and go, what the hell are you guys doing, right? That's rock and roll, you know. Yeah. But,
but you wouldn't understand.
But we ended up, we did our first gig. It was at the Doug Walters Club's luncheon. We played one song, it was Stand By Me. Yeah. It's had three chords. And in the audience was a guy called Garth Porter who was in the band Sherbet.
Yeah, right.
And he actually said to us, guys, we could do something here. And
how's that?
We ended up getting signed by EMI Records, and we were appalling when we got signed. We were a really bad band. But after about 500 live gigs now, yeah. we're okay. Yeah.
You even got your own cover bands.
Oh, yes, we do.
Tell us a little bit about that tour. I don't know if some of the cricketers we've interviewed in here, Whitney,
yep,
Tomo, of course, and they talk about that era where you'd go away for fucking 4 months to the Caribbean. Yeah. You didn't catch those mega tours.
Well, you had a World Cup.
The World Cup in Sri Lanka and India and Pakistan, that was about 3.5 months, yeah.
Yeah.
But come on, yeah. Imagine we play cricket in Italy. That'd be fun. Yeah.
The Italian World Cup, well, Tuscany.
It'd be a lot better than going, you know, to Wolverhampton.
That's it.
And go and play another game.
But it was good times, but yeah, it's now more condensed.
Yeah.
Just because of the amount of cricket.
Yeah, we saw there was a interesting yarn came out the other day about the real life Lord of the Flies.
Yep.
It was a bunch of Tongan teenagers ended up in that scenario. But they said because they were island kids, they actually, it didn't descend into chaos because they were used to kind of the isolation, right, as opposed to the story of the English boys that start eating each other. And they had this thing where it was timeouts and they just had a system where you could just avoid one another because you need to. How do you go 3 months in without killing each other on tour?
Yeah, you get less and less, particularly on an Indian tour. It all starts off, everything's nice, and you're great, and then when your room service doesn't get there on time, you know, it's just a laugh, but by the end of it, you're abusing everyone.
And then one person gets sick, and then you all get sick.
That's right, and then you're going into your self-isolation, like 10 times what we're experiencing now, and just close the blinds and lock everyone out. Halfway through my career, you had a roommate.
Yeah, right.
And then the second half you didn't, so that was easy. You can close the door and
just
put do not disturb on the door.
Zone
who out. Was the worst person you had to room with?
Michael Bevan. He's an insomniac. He's a weird unit anyway. I remember waking up one night and he'd always do not wake me up if you come in, and I'd come in really quiet after might have a couple of beers and 10 o'clock and sort of slide into bed, and then you just see his eyes staring at you like, fucking wake me up, right? And then you go to sleep, like, you sort of hear in the darkness like, what's he doing over there? And he's doing sit-ups, right? Thank God for that, right? It's a bad visual, I know.
Who was the best then?
Good tourist. I always got on really well with Damien Fleming.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, funny guy. Bradley Hodges is a good guy. Damien Martin was a good fellow. He's a bit of a weird unit now, but...
No, he's from Darwin, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Not a lot of cricketers come out of Darwin, do they?
No.
Tropic fever here.
Yeah. That was like Steve Waugh was always an interesting guy on tour. Took interest in that. Mark's changed a lot since he's retired.
Yeah.
He's quite more worldly now.
Yeah.
But
still see him ringside at heavyweight boxing matches. Hanging out with colourful racing identities.
That's right. Yeah. Tab ticker still hanging out of your pocket. Yeah.
Did they used to do that where they'd pair you up with obviously, apart from the Shane Show, did they ever pair you up with any old heads that they thought would be good for you?
Well, my first roommate for New South Wales was Mark Taylor.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I was only like 18 or something, and you have a team dinner first night, and then after dinner he goes, well, what are you doing? I said, well, what are you doing? He goes, well, what are you doing? I said, well, what are you doing? I'll do whatever you do, right? He says, no, if you want to go and have a beer with the guys. I said, no, I'll come home with you, Mark. He's, he said, well, I was Australian captain, and then get into bed and go, oh, what do you want to watch? He goes, well, no, what do you want to watch? And that whole thing goes on. You want to turn the light off? No, you turn the light off. I was like, just get me out of here, right?
So you opted to go for a beer after that, every night after that.
Yeah, haven't stopped drinking since.
My run into tummy. Every pub you go to is an opportunity to escape a tummy. You ended up at the AIS before all this on an academy scholarship.
Yep.
Did that mean you had to go to Canberra?
No, that was in Adelaide.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the cricket academy.
Yes, that was, yeah. Based down at Henley Beach.
Yeah, right. Real ordinary part of the world, Henley Beach.
Yeah.
Well, good like, Arctic winds.
Yeah, there it is, yeah. That was under Rod Marsh, was the head coach, and Justin Langer was his assistant coach after playing a couple of test matches back then. But it was a really good academy bunch. It had Andrew Simons, it had McGrath was there, Ricky Ponting.
Were you there at the same time as him? Or?
Yeah. Jimmy Maher, Jason Alberger played for Victoria and New South Wales. Yeah, a lot of guys, and most guys end up playing quite a lot for their state in Australia.
Yeah, right. What was Ponting like in full flight during the punter era?
Well, he was a bit younger, so he would he was interesting. He's all he did bet on the horses. Bet on dogs. Yeah, and he was just apparently a disgusting roommate. It was some bad odors came out of that room, but he was young, but he's an amazing player.
Yeah.
The guy plays scratch golf as well, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just a competitive animal?
I wouldn't call him an animal, but he's not a great-looking bloke.
Who was the most competitive? You start, like, who's the clinical kind of... Well, psychopathic's often
McGrath.
Called. McGrath?
Yeah. I was about to say it had to be Pigeon.
Mate. Well, I room with him, and he started pulling out these, like, photo albums. I went, oh, that's nice. He'd bring pictures of his kids. No, they're all just dead pigs that he shot. Yeah. I'm not joking. There was like at least 1,000 pictures of him with a gun standing over a dead pig.
A couple of other pictures came a bit later. That we
well, you don't sleep that well after you see that next to your roommate.
Oh, man. That's the one thing about cricket. Everyone loves to get caught up in the romance of rugby league or AFL identities, more so in league. But you get a few in the AFL. You get your fucking dusties, your cappers and stuff. But it's almost like the lack of show ponies or peacocks in cricket is the most interesting thing, because you've got all these people on surface, they just look like squares, but they've all got their very, very bizarre character traits.
Yeah, what's the thing about like, cricketers and also cricket supporters, because it goes for so long, they have such long to be absolutely fucking crazy idiots, right? You spend a lot of time sitting around a change room when it's raining and it's like talking absolute shit, right? trying to make up the time, but yeah, some quirky...
Yeah, and the fans have got your numbers. They got your stats in their heads.
Yeah.
God, yeah.
And they yell at you.
They do. They abuse you. India, you go to India and the men scream like women, really? At a Beatles concert. Yeah.
They shriek.
Beatlemania. That's right. It was, yeah. Take it easy, mate.
So have you ever had that experience? Because, like, anyone who visits India, and, you know, myself, I'm a taller guy, so there is, like, just this assumption that you might be playing cricket for Australia as a tall white man from Australia. Have you ever been put in that situation where you have to hail your own cab in India?
No, and I've just told mates, like, mates that have come over there, I said, you're Tom Moody, because he looks a bit like Tom Moody, and you're so they get the same treatment, right?
Yeah, I remember in India walking past a big bunch of... Big group of Indian guys out in the street, and they were all just kept their eyes on me, just to see if they recognised me. And then as I walked past, I pretended to roll the arm over just to wind them up, and they stayed silent. I kept walking 10 more steps, and I hear, Wade. That's good, Chad, boys.
That's good.
You also dabbled in acting.
No, I didn't.
Didn't
I? No, that was Brett.
Brett?
He is a fine actor.
He did Bollywood, mate. Yeah.
All right.
I watched a movie of his.
I thought you were just a family of thespians. Sorry.
Au contraire.
I watched a movie of his the other day on Stan. What was it? I think it's called...
Un-Indian.
That one. God, yeah.
It was a big hit in India, though.
That was, you know, that was the good Will Hunting of Bollywood that year. I was glued to it.
Well, Brett and I actually went over years ago. We were invited to Singapore because they do the Bollywood Awards in a different country every year. We were live in Singapore in a stadium of about 8,000 people. And it was going live to about a billion, as always. And Brett and I are sitting next to the president and wife at the front there. We're going to present an award. And the guy comes out and goes, hello, Singapore, and hello, India. Very welcome here today. Very good to be here. And then his teleprompter broke down. And it's like dead air. And he goes, this is very embarrassing. How could you expect this in the technology capital of the world? Anyway, well, got an ad. And he throws an ad, and the fireworks goes off and shot him in the hand. He's dancing around like this. This is brilliant.
Let's dance.
Yeah, let's dance.
Well, that's it is interesting. particularly with Brett now still bouncing around. He's played more recently than you.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he retired about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But
and he's after he had all that time in a back brace.
Yeah, we've been hot in India in a back brace, I'd say that much. But he spends a lot of time still in India now commentating for Sky Sports over there.
Does he like it there?
He does. He does like it. He speaks a bit of the Hindi as well now. And he makes a lot of money over there. But they like him. He's always respected the culture and he works hard over there. But he still spends 3 months a year over there. And it's you're working from pretty early in the morning right through the night, so he works bloody hard.
It sounds tough, and it's loud. Yeah, it's so loud at all times.
And that's why it's exhausting, because you can't. Well, he can't particularly go to a restaurant or anything. He just gets mobbed.
So we've asked this question to every cricketer that we've had on the show, and it's to do with the ball tampering that happened.
Yes.
If you were to tamper a ball, hypothetically.
Yep.
Would you use a little square of sandpaper to perhaps
bright yellow
scruff up one side?
And if I did a Bunnings sponsorship prior to it.
Yeah.
it wasn't the best idea, was it? It was a bloody point. And I remember watching that game live. I was at a mate's tennis day up on North Shore.
Yeah.
And we finished having a few beers. We were watching it, and I picked it straight away. I said, something's not right there. Some yellow thing in his pants.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, this is going to be bad. And it was pretty appalling what we did. It's done a lot of damage to Australian cricket.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was a bit of a kind of mob.
A bit of an overreaction.
It was a witch hunt. Just that footage of Smith getting dragged through the airport to get on the plane, then think about what he's done for another 12 hours back here.
Yeah.
And then face a press conference without sleeping.
Well, mate, and also there's a duty of care, right? Yeah. That wasn't fulfilled. And this bloody integrity unit, who the fuck are they, right? I never been named.
Yeah.
Start off with David Warner's wife and thing with Sonny Bill. That starts it all. Yeah. And then that Cricket Australia do nothing about it. They let it roll on. And then David Warner gets a little punch up.
Second test.
Yeah. Cricket Australia still do nothing.
Yeah.
And the third test, the ball tampering. And then the worst thing is that Smith and that go straight and have a press conference. Still no Cricket Australia there to say,
and
guys,
they're laughing about it.
And the umpires didn't change the ball.
No.
So they've admitted to murder, and it was only attempted murder.
Yeah. But my favourite one is when they had that little dust up on the way into the change rooms, and they said,
"By de Kock."
Yeah, de Kock. But Faf is the most alpha man ever to break up a fight wearing a towel.
Yeah, that's right. And he was caught tampering the ball less than a year earlier, and he was like, "You got me." Yeah, I was rubbing the ball on my zipper.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And he got two matches and a fine.
And the keeper Boucher, he got caught. He had sand and araldite on his glove, and he'd catch it and just rub it. He got $6,000 fine.
Well, that's the real question we asked. Whitney gave us some insight, and obviously Whitney and Tomo will tell you whatever you want to hear. And they said, well, "Would I fucking done it as well?" And in my day, let me tell you, Tomo told us that he pulled out a razor blade and used to almost cut the thing into quarters.
He goes, "I've run this razor blade right over the side, and I've bowled it, and the ball's just fallen to bits."
like an orange.
And the umpires have a look at it and go, "I've never seen anything like this in my life. This ball's bouncing hard."
He had a Gillette razor in his pocket.
So, hypothetically, if you were going to tamper a ball, how would you do it?
Well, you used to throw the ball on its side onto the other rough pitches, or you'd dive into the fence and scrape it along the cement. But it's pretty hard now because the umpires, and you've got all these cameras on you. You're crazy to do it.
Do you believe it does?
Yeah,
is this a cricket superstition? Because some people don't believe it.
Definitely does it, mate. Definitely does it. And
where's the line as well? That's another question, because now we're talking about social distancing and isolation.
Right.
Spits allowed?
Is it not allowed? Yeah, that's right. And some of the sporting companies are looking at bringing out some sort of gunk or something to replace sweat.
Oh, right. yeah. Gets caught, someone catches.
Who's going to endorse the gunk? I don't know.
Jeff Johnson gunk.
I think we owe it to Smudge to give him a little bit of a Christmas bonus after everything that happened. Yeah, what was your thinking? Did you ever think it was going to get as bad as it did? You said you were with a bunch of mates watching it. Was there a moment where you were like, no?
I said, no. Straight away, I knew it was going to be a disaster. I knew it was going to be worldwide news.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, and there's rumours going around that the Aussie team were told prior to that too. Mm. They were warned. That was they really? Saw something going on potentially the game before.
Yeah, right.
Allegedly.
Okay, boys, don't use the bright orange tape. Use the yellow stuff today.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
So you, like a lot of cricketers, kind of end up doing lunches, and that's where we've kind of found, this is where you've ended up with your podcast, Lunch with Lee.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about delving into that world, because obviously when you an ex-player, you go for speak in an event, or you or you kind of just a guest at an event, you've got to deal with the punters.
Yep.
Because you're making their week. They get a photograph with you.
Yeah.
They go home. You know, he's a good bloke. Yeah. And then they see you again a year later and expect you to remember their name.
Yeah. No, I remember walking off the MCG, taking 5 for 33, my best figures, catching up with my two best mates that had flown down to see me, you know, play the match. And I thought, I've really done it. I've done it for Australia. I've taken 5 for 33. You sort of know when someone recognises you, and it's this guy. There's no way to lie. He's lying in the gutter, and he sort of just lifts his head up and says, "Lee, you're fucking shit," and then claps back in the gutter. Goes, "Thanks, mate."
Thank you, mate. I'll just step over you there. Sorry.
So, what was the transition like out of cricket? Like, did you make enough contacts in the sport to try and make that process a bit easier, or did you just cut the cord?
No, I was very, very conscious of that. I went to university and did a psychology science degree, and then co-founded a media business, which I built up and sold. So I was very conscious of that. There's a fine line. Like Brett always used to say, he had no fallback position, so he had to perform.
Yeah,
and he said he'd be fucking in big trouble if he couldn't bowl. But I like to have the balance and the security of having something else as well. And also, mate, you don't want to be thinking about cricket 24/7. Does your head in? Yeah. Fair dinkum.
It's worse than golf.
Mate, people say to me, why don't you still play great cricket? And I said, because you play in a parched outfield with a parched throat, and every second bloke calls you a prick.
That's true.
Yeah, I remember that. Was the grade cricketer had a good one. The grade cricketer is another podcast, but they during the gay marriage vote, they put out a tweet saying, "To all the great cricketers out there, vote yes, because in the eyes of a fourth grade wicketkeeper, we're all gay."
And they're bringing those guys. Yeah. No, the podcast thing, Lunch with Lee, has been fantastic. It's I thought, what have I done 10,000 hours at? And obviously that cricket and lunch.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit of an expert at lunch. And so the idea is to have across my three passions, sport, music and business, and have guests from those backgrounds.
Yeah.
But the underlying thing is a little bit about men's health, right? Yeah. I think since I turned 46 years ago, you know, a lot of mates again get divorced or they're going through some pretty bad stuff and health stuff and scares. And as blokes, we sort of self-diagnose.
We're a bit more breakable after 40, you reckon?
Very much so.
After a few lunches.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But then, you know, I'm not trying to save the world with this, but it's a good laugh. One comes out next Monday with Mickey O'Loughlin and a guy called Stu Gregor, who makes the Four Pillars Gin. And yeah, Mickey O'Loughlin, former Swans player. And that was no serious chat. That was just a really, really good laugh talking about sport and booze.
Yeah.
It's too easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit different to, you know, cricket, but
not really.
So what's the setup? You just sit down, bottle of red, and a bit of lunch.
Yeah, it's over lunch. So we'll be doing it at different restaurants. And we sit down and we'll order a meal and we'll have a chat and laugh and have a few drinks and then a bite to eat.
Yeah, kitchen cabinet, basically.
Kitchen just cabinet. Yeah.
Someone else's kitchen.
That's it. I'll get paid to go to lunch now. That's great. Yeah. My wife says, "What are you doing today?" I said, "I'm going to work, babe. I'm off for lunch."
Off to icebergs.
That's right.
Gambaros.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, that's...
I'm working.
What is, I guess, with relationship you maintain with the guys you play, do you do the reunions? Is there a...
It's funny you say that. We've actually... got in touch Matthew Nicholson, who was in the Australian Cricket Academy in Adelaide. We're going to a reunion for next year.
All right.
Is that 15 years or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Looking forward to that.
Because there's always call a reunion, right? If you had a good playing group. Well, favourite one I saw the other day was the old Western Reds from the NRL. Remember that Super League flash in the pan? Yeah. They had
three teeth between them.
Yeah, three actual players between them too. They had a reunion at the Greyhound track in Perth the other day. It looked glorious. But you know, you've got a few. Your name, you've got the World Cup, and you've got you know, you've got an Australian cricket side and that kind of stuff. Is there How does that... do you find it back in the room there's the same kind of...
It is with Warnie.
Yeah.
Things hasn't changed. You're still looking for a bit of action. No, it's good. God, I think some guys, yeah. Most guys never really change. Some of them are sort of a bit more insular now.
Mm-hmm.
Head down, maybe embarrassed with how they carried on back in the day. But, yeah, it's good. But it's like a school reunion. I didn't go to my Oak Flats one, and thank God I didn't. It was a full-on punch-up.
Yeah, really?
Yes.
Yeah. How good.
And that was just the girls.
Scrack fight. Yeah, the extensions came out.
That's right.
So, and it is funny in those reunions too, because the blokes have kind of, you know, gone on to make a fair bit of coin. They kind of keep their heads a bit lower.
Like, they do, yeah. Yeah. My bloke comes in, I go, tell you about my house in South of France.
Anyone want a cigar?
Yeah.
Well, mate, we're excited to hear a bit more of these Lunch with Lees.
Yeah.
That should, yeah, I look forward to any other guests you got locked in coming up.
Yeah, I'm looking to do Jimmy Barnes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that should be a good lunch, that one.
Southern Island somewhere.
End of July. Piers Morgan.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Whoa. He would have followed your career in 10. He's a mad
cricket fan. Yeah. But some really, really good guests.
Can't
some more in and around rugby league and AFL,
yeah.
And some music ones as the tours start coming out here.
We'll
a few of the musos,
yeah.
In and it's a very different dynamic having a lunch with a couple of ex-sportsmen and a couple of current musicians.
Yeah.
They finish at very different hours.
Yeah.
Hey, I brought a guitar here, Jimmy. Do you want to just
that's right.
A little bit of case art?
That's right.
Live?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I can't play.
Yeah.
You sing.
Yeah. You play it. I'll sing.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, that sounds good. Everyone, so for the listeners, Lunch with Lee, yeah, it's well and truly ripping off. The next big thing, I guess, Australia's Joe Rogan.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, we start talking about psychedelics and different political theories a bit later. Maybe next season we'll get into that
right,
stuff.
Yes, yes.
For now, it's music, business, and sport, which we all love.
And lunch.
yeah.
Yep.
Beauty. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Sean.
Good fun.